seconds. One call, that's all.
Connaughton passes back to Giannis. Giannis has it. He's going to launch up the three for the tie, and he hits it! There's a new scoring king in the Cream City. His name is Giannis.
Recap everything you need to know about this game right now.
The inbound pass to Durant for the win. The three-pointer misses, back iron, and the Bucks have come from behind to strike again. They take down the Nets 120 to 119 in overtime.
Now, here's your host, your analyst, and your MC for the evening.
Make some noise!
Justin Garcia.
Yeah!
I was just going to play the Giannis highlight. I mean, we could keep playing it over and over. I don't think people will get sick of hearing that. And you can't say the highlight either. He had the three to become the all-time leading scorer and, oh, by the way, tie the game. He had the defensive play to force overtime. He calmly hit two free throws with less than 10 seconds left to win the game. He's done everything this week. He saved the game on Tuesday against Philly. Back-to-back 40-point games. His stretch of scoring 30 or more on the road is intact. He is now tied with LeBron James for the scoring lead in the NBA. His team is one half game back of the Miami Heat for the best record in conference. I don't know what else you need to see to crown him a three-time MVP. I want to get into that discussion because there's a lot of baggage that comes with it. I've been very strong in my opinion. I know early, and by the way, Giannis becomes a scoring king on a night where we're rejoined. A special one night only here on the show, but we are rejoined by Greg Hill. I mean, it's fitting that Kings stay Kings on this night.
Coincidence? I don't know.
Exactly. I knew it was going to happen when I thought, wait a minute, what is going on here? But there is an MVP discussion to be had, and my stance has certainly changed a couple of times throughout the season, but it really changed in the last 2 days. And I'm going to be curious. The straw polls have been out for a couple of days now. Tim Bontemps does it quarterly. And in the most recent straw poll, what it told me was Joel Embiid has no chance at winning. You almost feel bad for Joel Embiid, too. I know he's an easy guy around these parts to dislike. But you almost feel bad for Joel Embiid because he's having an incredible season, but he's doing it in the same year where Nikola Jokic has been a video game, and now all of a sudden Giannis is saying, you know, I'm here, too, and playing like an MVP. But the results of the straw poll told me that Joel Embiid has no chance at winning. I want to get into that in just a moment. But as always, the numbers to get in touch with us tonight on Bucks Talk, 855-616-1620. Whether you're listening in Milwaukee or Madison, Giannis becomes the greatest player in franchise history tonight. He has as many championships in a Bucks uniform as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And I know Kareem played in two finals in a Bucks uniform. But Giannis has resurrected this franchise. Where they were in, I mean, honestly, 2002 through 2013, not just where they were in the years leading up to that 2013, that summer when they drafted this unknown kid from Greece, who you thought, well, maybe we're buying a lottery ticket here. I know that was my stance at the time they drafted him. Great, let's take this guy because I know nothing about him. I've seen the rest of these guys play. Where you're picking, you're not going to get anything special for the most part. So, yeah, why not? Let's see if this guy turns into something, and he did. Where this Bucks franchise was, they were, to say an afterthought, is putting it very, very mildly. I went to college, so we're going to get to your calls in a second, but here's the backstory. I went to college, same place you did, Greg. I spent my formative years in the city of La Crosse.
Represent.
Right? It's changed from the time I was there, because I don't want to date myself too much, but the time I was there was shortly after that flame out in the season after the Eastern Conference Final. But long story short, when I was there, when I was in lacrosse, I loved basketball, so I was obviously a Bucks fan. You could not find any interest in the Bucks. None. The Timberwolves were the team that people were interested in. And, I mean, that was the stretch, too, of Kevin Garnett, and Spree was there, and Sam Cassell was there. But people were interested in the T-Wolves. You would say, hey, can you throw on the Bucks game? It was, what? Who? No. You couldn't even... I lived in Madison after college. Nobody cared about the Bucks. Nobody watched the Bucks. And yes, a lot of that has to do with, is it a compelling product? Is it entertaining? Are they going to win? I mean, that was the Jamal McGlure and Andrew Bogut and, a lot of mediocrity those years. But still, zero appeal, zero reach beyond the city of Milwaukee. And this wasn't new to that portion of the decade. It had basically been like this since Don Nelson was here. And then slowly but surely, they started to do all these things, right? They changed their uniform. They changed the color scheme. They said, we look like Christmas trees, right? Let's change this. Let's make our uniforms a little cooler here. Let's make our jerseys cooler. Let's come up with a different concept and logo scheme. It was everybody thought, yeah, this is a great look. And they started to reinvest in their history. They played at the Mecca. They started to recognize all of those guys from the Don Nelson team, from the championship team, from the 70s and the 80s. They remembered, hey, we do have a pretty storied past here, and let's kind of draw into that and bring that group back and get them interested again. And then, oh, by the way, Giannis became pretty friggin' good. Chris Middleton, a throw-in in a Brandon Jennings trade, became really good. And you hired the right coach who took you to the next level. You made the right personnel moves. It's all part of the process, no pun intended, but it's all part of the process. And now this team has that reach everywhere else. I mean, you cannot explain it. If you live outside of Milwaukee, you understand it because you're probably new to the Bucks and saying, well, this is entertaining. I should have gotten into this long ago. But you understand it if you're outside of Milwaukee. If you've been in Milwaukee your entire life and you think, why isn't anybody interested in the Bucks? You don't understand why. It's amazing to me that moving throughout the state, going through parts of the state, going up to Green Bay, going to Madison, going back to lacrosse, doing some radio hits in lacrosse, and hearing people interested in the Bucks. Going back to these parts, I was in Door County, I was in lacrosse, I was in Eau Claire, and I see people walking around wearing Bucks gear, and it's not just Giannis jerseys. It's like, wow, I cannot believe I'm seeing this. So that was everything that started with Giannis. And now this is everything that the generation prior to people of my age always talked about. Man, you guys have no idea how good those Mecca-era Bucks were under Don Nelson, with Marcus Johnson, with Paul Pressey, with Sidney Moncrief. You guys have no idea how good it was. We were the forgotten team because we went against the Hawks, the Celtics, the Pistons, the Sixers, and we were probably the best team to never reach the NBA Finals. And it's like this team had been cursed, and this one guy comes along and changes everything. You got to be really special to do that, and as we've seen for the last decade, basically, he is that special, and tonight it just cements it, moving past Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for the all-time scoring lead and doing it the way he did. I mean, it's fitting that Giannis does this in what's essentially the game-saving and winning play and in a game that his team won. And this was not hollow points here. This wasn't stat padding. This was Giannis doing it in a big moment, as he's done all throughout the years now for the Bucks. 855-616-1620 is the Acunet Mortgage Talk and Text Line. A lot to get to. Giannis becomes the king of Milwaukee. The Bucks show us something against the Brooklyn Nets. A Nets team that I contend, you guys are worrying a little too much about this team. And the MVP discussion. What does this mean for Giannis's MVP odds? And will we start to see the tide turn next week? Because these were two big games that a lot of people paid attention to, and Giannis was the story of the game. Plenty of time to hear from you as well. 855-616-1620, the number, whether you're listening in Milwaukee or Madison. We'll get to all of that after this on the night where Giannis is crowned king.
This is Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. Call, that's all.
Bound pass. He'll get it to Holiday. Holiday around midcourt. He's at the top of the arc with a left-hand dribble. Drives in. Bounce pass inside to Giannis. Feeds out top. Connaughton passes back to Giannis. Giannis has it. He's going to launch up the three for the tie, and he hits it! There's a new scoring king in the Cream City. His name is Giannis. All hail the Greek freak.
It is still unbelievable, everything that he has accomplished since being the 15th overall pick in 2013. A gangly kid from Greece that nobody knew much about. And he had a couple of highlight reel plays his rookie year. Started to get a little bit better. It was year three where he started to make some leaps, and then you were convinced, okay, he can be an all-star. And he just kept getting better and better and better. And I want to get to that, too, because you see a difference when you watch Giannis versus guys like Joel Embiid. And this is not a knock or a slight on Joel Embiid, because Giannis was in this spot 2 and 3 years ago. And none of us wanted to hear it at the time because we finally had a superstar. And that's the first thing you need in this league. You got to get a superstar. Unless you're the 2003 Detroit Pistons, you got to get a superstar. You got to surround him with the right pieces. But that superstar has to continually get better. Kobe Bryant, probably the best example of it. He was a superstar from the moment he arrived. Kobe Bryant transformed his game. Kobe Bryant was that highlight reel guy. Kobe Bryant couldn't really shoot all that well early on. I mean, remember his rookie year. He airballed the threes in the series against the Jazz. Kobe became a better shooter. That fueled him. Kobe transformed his game after the injuries and everything else, where he became a baseline guy and had the turnaround game and wasn't just the acrobatic, athletic guy. What has Giannis done the last year, not even last 2 years, not even last full year, since towards the end of the season, but really since that Brooklyn Nets series, he has become a completely different player, where he has embraced being a big. He takes the threes when it matters. He's added a mid-range game, and he's played like a big, where it was great. It was, oh, wow, this is flashy. This is incredible that this guy's a seven-footer. He's handling the ball. He's playing point guard. He's doing all these things. But he realized, what makes my team best when I do this and when I get to these spots where no one can stop me? And he's become that guy. He was not that guy 2 years ago and 3 years ago. He's still really good, and he was going to score 27, 28, 30 points a night in the regular season. But there were two runs in the playoffs where you saw he's good, he's great, he's not there yet. That's where Joel Embiid is at now. I think that's where Nikola Jokic is at now. It's a very, very, very select list of players that have advanced past that. Because, look, it's a different type of person that gets to the level that all of these guys get to and is still driven to say, you know what, I got more. I can do better than this. Giannis is in that conversation. And, boy, it really, really, really made me reevaluate it this year, because I think coming into this season, you still said, man, he's the best two-way player in the league. But if you tell me it's game seven, you can pick anybody in the league, put him on your team, you got to win the game, you can pick anyone. Would Giannis have been your first pick? I think most people in Milwaukee, probably Giannis, yes, because we are that hospitable, welcoming, appreciative group. So, yes, I think a majority here would say Giannis. But across the league, I think a majority of people would say Kevin Durant. And I think that's a fair assessment. But what we've seen this season, what we saw tonight and Tuesday night is, it's a coin toss at best. You have to say, you know what? Kevin Durant is in Giannis's category. And Kevin Durant's an underrated defender. We saw it tonight. Giannis is at that level. He's added that mid-range game. He's unstoppable when he gets in the paint. He was, what did I say it was? I think 11 of 13 in the paint tonight. he's the best player in the league, and he keeps getting better. He should be the MVP, and that's what this week has told us. 855-616-1620 is the Acunet Mortgage Talk and Text Line to get in touch with us on Bucks Talk. Let's head to the phone lines and talk with our friend Dick in Port Washington. You're first on the show. What's going on, Dick?
Okay, well, part of this tonight, there's several things I hate. One is I'm 71, okay? So you guys weren't around, I don't think. When Larry Krystkowiak got hurt against the Pistons, they carried him out in the Bradley Center. He raises his hand, the place goes nuts. I mean, we've been a good team for a long time. The national media just totally ignores that, okay? That's one point. The second point is, you know, everyone talks about the MVP. I don't think Giannis gives a crap about that. He wants to win. If you read the book, and I advise anyone, I don't know who the lady is.
Mirren Fader.
I even got my wife to read this book. Yeah, it's a tremendous book. You just have got to love Giannis for that, okay? And then tonight, okay, he missed two free throws that would have put the game away, but he came back and wins two free throws to win the game. All he cares about is championships, and I think that's where it's going to go from here. And I don't get this idea that the media keeps talking about where he's at, doesn't do this. He is a dominant player in the NBA. Who cares if he gets the MVP? We want to go on to the next level. And tonight, I think I called in last week, and I think I told you, this game tonight was the biggest game of the entire year. And I said, if we lose by three, I'm still happy. We won this thing. I don't care if we lose the rest of the games. We are going to be the team that no one wants to play. And the TNT show tonight sucks because the regular guys weren't there. I'm sick of this. Give us some credence here. We're the team no one wants to play. Not the Nets. So what do you think?
No, I completely agree with you on that last point, Dick, and I was asked it elsewhere. It might have been on our pal Jason Wilde and Mark Tauscher's show the other day of, well, who's the team that that you don't want to see in the playoffs? And the easy answer is to say the Brooklyn Nets, and I want to get to that in just a second, but it's clearly the Bucks. Like, they have been the team that I think everybody monitoring the situation has been looking from afar saying, I hope what we're seeing right now in December and January, like I hope that's what this team actually is. I hope they're tired from the run last year. I hope Brooke Lopez is done. I hope they don't have the depth. I hope Bobby Portis takes a step backward. I hope this team is inconsistent because look at what they did in the finals. Look at what they did in the playoffs last year. And look, a big piece of it is gone in P.J. Tucker. But you saw tonight the series where P.J. Tucker loomed largest was against the Brooklyn Nets because he was basically entirely defending Kevin Durant. He's pretty big in the final series against the Suns as well because that's another perimeter-based team where you got to have switchability. But you got to worry about the finals. You got to get to the finals before you worry about it. He was huge in that series against the Nets. And I kept coming back to in the first half of this game, you kept thinking about what P.J. Tucker said last year. And I think it was after game four of the series between these two teams. But he made the point of, it really frustrates me when I see help come over on Kevin Durant. Like, I tell my teammates, I got him. It might not look like it, but I got him. Don't worry about it. Don't leave your guy. Don't leave guys open. Like, if KD beats us, then KD beats us. But we don't want to give up open looks. And you look at the first half and how the Nets shot the ball. They were getting a lot of good looks and clean looks because they were, I don't know if I'd even say overhelping, but they were very aggressively doubling Kevin Durant and flashing help constantly at him. Kevin Durant, as we just said, is an incredibly underrated defender. He is a very gifted passer as well. Kevin Durant is incredible. Like, we learned that last year. If you were late to the party and you didn't respect his greatness because you were mad that he ruined the NBA for 3 years by joining the Warriors, you saw last year, you know what? I was wrong. This guy is pretty good, and he's now Teflon. He's gotten a full approval rating. He was the guy that stayed healthy and just hooped in that series. And that first half, they did the opposite. Bruce Brown was hitting shots. Everybody else was hitting shots. And you thought, I don't know, should we go back to what we were doing before? But slowly but surely, they employed some different tactics. I think what you cannot deny is tonight and Tuesday against the Sixers, that is the most comfortable they have looked switching all season long. They were basically on a string, and they had succinct, timed, synchronized movement when they were switching around the perimeter. That's another thing to be really encouraged by to see from this team moving forward. But Giannis to do this tonight against that team and against a team that everyone is concerned with, this is the team you should be concerned with because Giannis is just quietly doing what he's doing. Wesley Matthews isn't P.J. Tucker, but Wesley Matthews is dipping into that and replacing a lot of that. Drew Holiday is still incredible offensively, and Drew Holiday may have regressed a little bit defensively in the regular season, but we've seen in these two games, part of that is probably let's keep some in the tank for the postseason. So the Bucks, to Dick's point, are absolutely the team. Everyone should be looking over their shoulder and saying, so when would we have to play this team? Like right now, worst case scenario is a team like the Boston Celtics, and they've been incredible defensively. Do you really want the Bucks in the second round, especially if Time Lord's not going to be in that series? We've seen some interesting tactics from Philly. I want to get to that in a moment. And that MVP discussion as well, because there's one clear thing in play, which I want to break down in just a second here. But 855-616-1620 is the AccuNet Mortgage talking text line to get in touch with us. Dave is in Mequonago. You're up next.
Hey, Justin. Thanks for the program. I want to give a shout-out to Greg. He's an awesome side host. But I was sort of like you. I sort of doubted the what you were – I actually doubted what you were saying about the Nets. Like, I'm wondering why you weren't afraid. And then I just – saw this game and I'm like, the Nets have no answer for Giannis. He's just incredible. And in the last few games, you've seen that teams just can't stop Giannis. And if they try to stop him, he just kicks it out to capable thing. And that's why I think there's only one team that really has the ability to beat the Bucks. I just think that Giannis is just so good that teams just don't know how to stop him. Just like you were saying, and I have confidence in the Bucks and like Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton. And you even see Chris Middleton foul out and the Bucks still win the game. It's just incredible.
Is that one team, are they in the Eastern Conference?
No, they aren't. I think no team in the Eastern Conference can even come close to the Bucks.
I think I'm with you. Where it's the Phoenix Suns are the team that you look across the board and you say they're just as good as they were last year, maybe better. They got a lot of depth, and they got a lot of challenges that they're going to present the Bucks. So that's the team that I look at because, you know, with Brooklyn. Thanks for the call, Dave. With Brooklyn, let's just get to this now. Let's rip the Band-Aid off. I'm not saying I want to play the Brooklyn Nets in a playoff series. I do not want to have to defend Kevin Durant for 4, 5, 6, or 7 games again, but we can become prisoners of the moment. And I think that's what we have done with the Brooklyn Nets. They've started to play really well lately because Kevin Durant is back on the floor. And Kyrie Irving is rejuvenated and re-energized. And that's it. He's not immunized. Maybe he is immunized. But we've become a prisoner of the moment with the Brooklyn Nets because now all of a sudden most of their pieces are in place here. By the way, Ben Simmons is not playing this year. You are crazy if you think this guy is going to come back during the playoffs, that he's going to go a full year without playing, and then, oh yeah, we hope to get him back. Like Steve Nash just said it the other day, like, spare me. We know he's not coming back. I understand what you're doing here, but you expect me to believe he's going to sit out for an entire year and then come back during the playoffs. And by the way, I'm not even questioning the mental health thing, because that's an entirely different can of worms, and we don't know, to be honest. How does Ben Simmons get a back issue from sitting out? He's not coming back, and he's a guy that he would help. I don't think that swings things and all of a sudden makes the Nets this title contender. But Kevin Durant is really what you're worried about. Kyrie Irving is a great shot creator. But here's the deal. The Nets just gave up 123 points to the Pistons the other night. They gave up 120 to the G League Trailblazers just a couple of games ago. This defense is horrific. Opponents are scoring 112 points a game against the Nets. That is the fourth worst on a nightly basis in the Eastern Conference. The Hawks, Pacers, and Hornets are the only teams that are worse than Brooklyn. Their point differential is less than a point. You are going to be able to score the ball against the Nets. The Bucks clearly did that tonight. And when you get to crunch time, when push comes to shove, yes, you have to contend with Kyrie Irving. Yes, you have to contend with Kevin Durant. They have two shot creators that are legendary shot creators. But you got a lot of guys that you are going to be able to attack. And what it comes down to, we saw this in the second round last year. We saw it against the Suns in the finals. You got to be able to stop teams. And you got to be able to score. It's not just stopping. You got to score. Because there were a couple of frustrating sequences in the third quarter tonight where the Bucks did get the stop. They didn't score. And as you watched it, you said, you're not going to stop Kevin Durant every time down the floor. You got to start to put the ball through the net. And they did. The problem with Brooklyn is this was a bad offensive game from the Bucks too, by the way. They went in overtime in a game where the offense was horrendous for most of this game. They played much better in the second half. Chris Middleton, we didn't even get to this yet, elephant in the room, ejected from the game. The Bucks did not play great. I thought the Nets played really well, and the Bucks still beat them. I don't think the Nets can beat the Bucks 4 out of 7 games. The defense is just not going to be able to come up with stops. And what you saw in the fourth quarter in overtime is a playoff-level defense from the Bucks. It's something that the Nets don't have. The Bucks have enough capable guys they can throw at Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. You don't feel great with Chris Middleton on him, but you've got enough bodies. You can put Wesley Matthews on him. We saw Giannis, by the way, taking on that challenge quite a bit in the second half. And Drew Holiday just has this ability to, when you put him on Kyrie Irving, he can shut him down. That's why the Nets are a team. Do I want to play them? No. But do I think the Nets are going to beat the Bucks? No. Like, I don't want to play the Nets because you would play them in the first round. And you should not want a path that's, well, let's see. Right now, it would be Brooklyn in your first round matchup. We would assume Boston in the second round. And then Miami or Philly in the conference finals. Like, I don't want to play the Nets because I don't want that path. I would rather have the Bulls, the Raptors, the Cavs, the Hornets, whoever it is. I would rather have that in the first round. But I also think, based on how we saw last year go, based on this season, based on games like tonight and this week, the Bucks don't care. If they finish second and they get the Brooklyn Nets, so be it. We're confident that we can beat them. 855-616-1620, the Acunet Mortgage Talk and Text Line. Chris Middleton, the play. Should it have been a flagrant 2, and is it part of the NBA's plan to eliminate that play? More after this.
The Hardwood Homilies continue after this. This is Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. Offices. One call, that's all.
Here's a pull-up shot. Durant misses strong, but a long rebound. It's a race, and off the foot of Durant, picked up by Allen. Allen throws it up the court, and it's going to be a near turnover off the backboard, but it comes back out top to Holiday. A frenetic possession. Lobs up top to Giannis for the two-hand flush. An alley-oop, and the Bucks have their first lead since the final 2 minutes of the first quarter. It's 87-86, 10 seconds to go now here in the third.
Was it the most impressive win of the season for the Bucks? Maybe. It was the night where Giannis becomes the all-time leading scorer in franchise history, and it was the night where Giannis really cements his case as the MVP of the league. 855-616-1620, the Acunet Mortgage Talk and Text Line. I do want to break down that MVP discussion and what I think the hang-up is right now. The reason why voters were hesitant to put Giannis in that, in these straw polls. But I think, again, what we've seen, the early returns on the voting, Joel Embiid has no chance. It's going to be Nikola Jokic or Giannis. And yes, Giannis was third by a wide margin in the most recent poll. But Joel Embiid had no movement. And Joel Embiid, I think, has gotten more attention than Nikola Jokic this season. So he's got no chance. It is Jokic or Giannis at this point. And nights like tonight move a long way in swaying things. 855-616-1620, the Acunet Mortgage Talk and Text Line. Mike in Shorewood, you're up next on Bucks Talk.
Hey, how you doing, man? What a game. Nets and Bucks, man, they play some incredibly entertaining and wild game. And I think Giannis cemented his MVP. I think because Giannis set the standards of his own greatness, it's just hard for these voters to continue voting for him. With all due respect to Jokic, they're still the sixth seed. I know he's playing without his second-best player.
And third.
Probably even third.
Yeah.
Yeah, even third. But I think that the thing that separates Giannis from him is his dominance on defense. Jokic is great. He's a stud, top three player in my opinion, but he's just strictly offensive player. He's a non-factor defensively, which is a big reason why Denver has really, really struggled to get past the first round in most years there, as great as he is. And Embiid, it's just Embiid has dropped off, and funny enough, it's coincided with the Harden getting there. I think that's going to be just an epic disaster for him. I just don't think their games coincide. Harden is just not going to be the fit they expect Embiid. I think Giannis has cemented his gap, and I think the only reason why he wouldn't win it, like I said, is because his own greatness is against himself. You saw it again tonight, not only the three-point games. First of all, that call against Middleton, bogus. Come on, these Zebras got to do better. That was a terrible call. So even without their second-best gun out there, Giannis just taking over the game. Brooklyn looked like they'd had it in the bag. And the Nets showing that championship moxie, just taking over once again. Giannis hitting that clutch three. And then even more impressive, hitting those two game-winning free throws when a lot of guys would miss those. And just in a huge game that the Nets really needed, because they're tied right now with the Hornets and Hawks. It's going to be really fascinating here to see which one of those teams end up being the AC. It would just be the funniest thing with all these experts predicting the Nets are still going to come out of the East and they get knocked out of the play-in tournament by Hornets or the Hawks, which could likely happen because they've been so inconsistent. As great as Durant and Kyrie is, they just don't have the consistency, and they've been lagging around in that 8 seed. But the Bucks are playing their best ball right now, surging into the playoffs, and I think they're going to end up getting the top seed here because the Heat really have dropped off here. I know they won they won to beat Boston last night, but I think right now they're really struggling here to the finish line. And the Bucks right now are just playing their best ball. So incredible game tonight once again, beating Philly, one of the other contender, and then topping that off again tonight. Like I said, with that bogus call against Middleton, and still finding ways to get done. This team is just resilient, and they find ways to get it done. And like you mentioned, Giannis is just competing his own greatness. And these voters try to create narratives for guys like Embiid. And he is great.
Yep.
But like I said, he's dropped off here, and he just doesn't dominate a game like Giannis does. To me, it's Giannis and everybody else in the league right now. If you want to probably mention Luka right now is playing great ball, but I think it's just Giannis and everybody, even Tatum probably. But right now it's just he cemented himself as the best two-way player in the sport, and it's a privilege to watch it nightly here. And I love the way this team's playing right now. Get that top seed and surging into the playoffs, man. Great game tonight and great win, man. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, boy, there's a lot to unpack there, but really quick, I agree. Giannis is a better defensive player than Nikola Jokic, but would you believe the numbers indicate the Nuggets are better defensively with Jokic on the floor than off. And that was not the case the last few years. So he has improved there. I think that's what's going to come up the most is, well, I mean, this team is fifth or sixth in the West. Right now they're fifth. They're a half game in front of the Jazz, who have just been a disaster for the last 2 months. But right now they're fifth. I just think you can't be in that bottom tier. Like, you can't be towards the bottom. Can't be 7, 8, or 9. And it is a little ridiculous to say, well, fifth right now is 46-31. Seventh is 43-34. Like, what if fifth ends up being 48 wins and seventh ends up being 47-35? Like, well, sorry, you were seventh. You were one game worse, so you can't win MVP. No, but if you're the MVP, your team is not in the play-in tournament, I don't think. And especially in the West, where it's you've seen more movement towards the top. The bottom of the West is brutal. So is the East. But the bottom of the West is just brutal. And it extends further than the East, where 8, 9, 10 have been really bad. Now, the Clippers are interesting for the same reasons the Nets are, because Paul George is back. There's rumblings Kawhi Leonard is going to be back for the play-in tournament as well. But the Pelicans have been horrendous. The Lakers are a bad team. There's more low-hanging fruit and wins there in the West than there have been in recent years, and certainly more than there is in the Eastern Conference. But I also think there's a little bit of fatigue going on two ends here. And that's the reason why Giannis, at latest check, was third in this straw poll for MVP voting. I do want to get to the Chris Middleton flagrant two and what it looked like there. But this MVP discussion, we got to check in on the Basketball Reference MVP tracker. Greg, remember too, we were ahead of the curve because we kept pointing out on a nightly basis, hey, the 538 thinks the Boston Celtics are pretty good. What's going on here? Maybe the Boston Celtics have been pretty good, so we'll get the latest on that as well because they both update nightly. We'll do that, the MVP discussion, and the flagrant two, question mark? A lot to get to here in the final segment of the program after this.
You're listening to Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. Presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. This is Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all.
Here's Irving, behind the back dribble, defended by Middleton. His shot blocked by Middleton as he tumbles down. Portis comes away with the rebound, passes ahead of Middleton to Giannis, who goes in with a big swooping one-hand jam. The Greek Freak is now sitting with 37 points, folks. He is 3 points away from the Bucks' all-time scoring lead with still 9:46 to play.
He got the scoring lead and he got the win. I mean, at that point, you started to rationalize with yourself and think, okay, I mean, you were guilty of it too, Greg. All right, they're not going to win this game, so let's just rest him. And then, hey, he can break the record at home. Like, they were down 9, and they were down 8, and it did seem like, guess it's not like the Chris Middleton flagrant 2. So let's get into it now. The Chris Middleton flagrant 2 felt like an end of the game because that was when, was it a 2-point game or a 3-point game? But regardless, Middleton is called for the flagrant. He's called for the foul. You knew it was going to be upgraded to a flagrant. I assumed it would be a flagrant 1, and it was ultimately ruled a 2, so he was ejected. So at the time that occurred, it was 99-96. Bruce Brown hits both free throws, so the lead goes from 3-5. And then Kyrie Irving shakes loose, and the lead goes from 3-7. That's the sequence where Jrue Holiday hit a three-pointer, and I do remember, I bad job by me to not put this out there, but I do remember at the time that happened thinking, you know, thinking back to that Nets series in the playoffs last year, thinking back to the Hawks series, we saw brutal offensive stretches from Jrue. But Game 7, Jrue Holiday hit two of the biggest shots in that game. Late in the fourth quarter, as bad as he was offensively for 3.5 quarters, It took one shot to turn things around, and Drew Holiday looked like a pretty good offensive player. When he hit that shot tonight, that made it 103-99 and knocked that margin back to four, you thought, man, the way he stepped into that three, mate, all right, this is a three that can kind of get him rolling, and you felt pretty good. Then Kevin Durant comes down the floor and hits a three, and it's back to seven. And then he had that alley-oop from Kyrie Irving, so it's nine with 4 minutes left. And that's the moment where you looked at it and thought, yeah, it's probably over. Like, Giannis isn't going to get the record tonight, and they're probably going to lose the game, so let's recoup and plan for tomorrow. But that was one of the stretches, too, where Giannis missed both at the free throw line. Wesley Matthews cleaned things up, gets the layup, 7-point game. Giannis gets back to the free throw line, hits both. They started to trade baskets, but then before you knew it, it's down to five on that Bobby Portis baby hook. It's down to four again, three, I should say, on Drew Holiday's play. And it just felt like neither team could really score. And Giannis steps into that three to become the all-time leading scorer, ties the game. But again, that shot is one thing. What Giannis did as a help defender on Kevin Durant is just as important and impressive to send the game to overtime. So both ends of the floor are where he made the plays. Now, we do have one segment left in the show. My mistake, the return of Greg Hill just threw me off in calculating the show. But I want to get to the MVP talk in that segment. We mentioned the Chris Middleton exchange, and I suppose now is as good a time as any to get into that. I would venture to guess, and if Twitter is our straw poll barometer here, I would venture to guess most Bucks fans were up in arms, and I would even go as far as saying a majority of you probably thought it shouldn't have even been a flagrant foul. Greg, your reaction?
Yeah, flagrant too, a little too much. But I understand the flagrant in the light of the NBA trying to stay consistent.
It's a flagrant one.
Right.
And it's a play that the league, as impressive and exciting as those plays are, and we see it all the time with Giannis. I think it's a play the league wants to get rid of. The chase down contest, especially from non-bigs. It was interesting because, I mean, you could see there was no malicious intent by Chris based off his reaction. If Bruce Brown doesn't slow down and, you know, try to hot dog it into a dunk, if Bruce Brown doesn't slow down and then sees out of the corner of his eye, oh, Chris Middleton's coming now, this never happens. Like, if he just gets that pass, goes the length of the floor, lays it in or dunks it, Chris is pulling up and not trying to contest. It's because he slowed down that you realize, oh, I got a chance. I still don't love the contest by Chris. Like, that's a play that you just kind of concede of. He's in front of me. I'm Chris Middleton. Chris is a bigger wing than people realize. But I'm not a shot contester, and I'm not a shot blocker. I'm Chris Middleton. It's Bruce Brown. He's in front of me. We'll let him have it. He's a good free throw shooter, too. So if I foul him, we're hoping he misses one or two. He's probably not going to. So I didn't think it was the greatest contest by Chris. It was a flagrant one. It is not a flagrant two. Isn't flagrant two, doesn't intent go into that as well? It's either a to the head or intent, a malicious intent and a windup. There was none of that. So the flagrant two was ridiculous. But that was a flagrant one. And just, you know, perusing Twitter, it seemed like a majority of Bucks fans thought, how is this even a flagrant foul? It's a flagrant foul. It's not a flagrant two. It's tough because those are plays we love seeing with Giannis. And we saw what happened last time we had a play like that. Maybe you could argue the Chicago Bulls have never recovered. So that was a really tough call, but let's also point this out. Chris Middleton was not playing good tonight. I would go as far as say this was a bad game from Chris. It was a really bad game. So I'm not going to say, well, the Bucks, hey, Chris wasn't even playing good, so at least he's the one that's gone. Like, no, you still need that threat out there. You still need that defender out there. That was a tough break. But this was not a good Chris Middleton game, and this was trending towards not a good Bobby Portis game either. Like, that's the other thing you have to point out is early on in this game, we talked about, you know, the Bucks' offense was just brutal. That first half, the offense was not good. For the game, it wasn't great. But Chris Middleton and Bobby Portis specifically, in that first quarter, Chris, 1 of 3. One turnover, it felt like he had more than that. In the second quarter, he did score 7 points, 2 of 5, though, and 1 of 4 on threes. Bruce Brown, and I think that was part of it, too, which we're just getting to now. But I think part of it, too, is Bruce Brown is a really tough matchup for Chris Middleton, and he has been through the years. He defended him well last year in the playoff series, and Bruce Brown is one of those guys that who does Chris Middleton feast on? Smaller wings, smaller guards, too. When he gets that size advantage, the footwork that he has on the baseline, I mean, he can get to a spot and he can rise up and shoot over them. You can't do that with Bruce Brown. He's about the same size. He's got deceptively long reach, and he's a really good defender. So he's a tough matchup for Chris, and I think part of that, too, was frustration. And I think Chris was really frustrated, and he saw, this is the guy that has been making my life really, really hard tonight and has been getting the best of me on the defensive end of the floor. He's blocked me, I think, twice. The Nets, another thing that the Nets did quite a bit of tonight. How many threes did the Nets block in this game? So that was a part of it. And I wonder if maybe that's why you upgraded to a 2 of the officials saying, we're not letting this escalate any further. We know it was this guy, and we know how you view this guy right now, so get out of here, and it's a 2. Still the wrong call. But it's a play that it's an aggressive contestion. It was not dirty. But I still would... It's a play that Chris Middleton didn't have to try and make in that game. In the third quarter, too, 3 turnovers for Chris with 4 points, 1 of 3 shooting. I mean, offensively, by the quarters here, by the numbers, he did not have one quarter where you say, okay, now he's starting to get into it, and now he's starting to snap out of this. It was a rough game for Chris. And I'm sure statistically we've seen worse performances, but you know, with the stakes of the game and with the opponent, and I don't want to inflate this game into more than it was, but this game meant a lot to the Brooklyn Nets. This game meant a lot to the national media, and this game meant a lot for the Bucks in their quest to potentially win the Eastern Conference regular season. So with those stakes, it was not a great game from Chris. When you take all of that into account, you could argue this is maybe the worst game we had seen him play this year. So to win that game with no Chris Middleton, who's ejected from the game, what, 4 minutes in, I think? He played 4 minutes in the fourth quarter, but about midway through the fourth, Chris Middleton is ejected. You close out the second half of the quarter in overtime without your second leading scorer, without a viable offensive option, despite the struggles, just as we touched on with Drew Holiday. Just takes one shot to get him going. That's what we saw in the postseason last year. Chris would look lost, and then all of a sudden, here comes a 20-point quarter. So he is capable of doing that. And again, the statistics are deceiving from Chris. Wasn't great. Dare I say bad, but 16 points, 9 boards, 4 assists. This is what makes this team so tough, is 3 years ago, they lose this game. It's not a knock on Eric Bledsoe. They lose this game if Eric Bledsoe is the point guard, because Chris Middleton's ejected, and it's, all right, Giannis and Bled, you guys got to initiate and create everything. You don't have the offense. Giannis's growth, adding Drew Holiday over Eric Bledsoe, these are all those baby steps that we've talked about through the years that this team recognized. We got to do this. And this is what takes us to the next level. I mean, this is the performance tonight. He's a closer. For all the talk of, but he only dunks. Yeah, he only scores in the paint. Well, he can't do it late. He can't do it in the clutch. I mean, free throw shooting, fourth quarter scoring, biggest plays of the game. 15 of 19 at the free throw line. The scoring that Giannis, I believe he's still a leading scorer in the fourth quarter in the NBA this season. 9 points in the fourth quarter tonight. Only scored 2 in overtime. But, I mean, had the three biggest points of the game, had another defensive play, and by the way, the only 2 points he scored in overtime were those free throws that iced the game. That's another thing. We saw it against the Sixers on Tuesday. The differences we've talked about, that it's plain as day to recognize in Giannis these last couple of years. Last year, I believe it was one of the games against the Suns. I can't remember. But there was a play where Giannis had the ball, immediately got it out of his hands, found Chris, and Chris hit the free throws late in the game. Tuesday against Philadelphia. Same type of play. Bucks are nursing the lead. They get it to Holiday. He passes to Giannis. Giannis just keeps dribbling down the floor. Chris Middleton is wide open at midcourt. Could have easily just slung it to Chris, let him eat the foul, send him to the line, and we got 2 free points. Giannis kept the ball. And Giannis started attacking, knew he was going to get fouled, went to the free throw line. You didn't see him do that in the past. It wasn't so much that he was afraid. And it wasn't at all that he was afraid of the moment. He just recognized this is the right play to make. Chris Middleton's a better free throw shooter than me. I'm getting the ball to him. He'll hit him, and we're good. Against Philadelphia, he is so confident. And that, to me, is another thing that you kind of notice along the way and say, wow, this is another difference, and this is what makes him even better. He didn't give the ball up. He knew he was going to get fouled. He attacked the basket, goes to the free throw line, and only went 1 of 2 in that Sixers game in that spot. But his reaction when he missed the first free throw and how upset and furious he was. Like, we've seen him in those spots before, in the previous playoff runs, in the 19 playoffs, in the 20 playoffs. We had seen him in those spots, get to the free throw line, and you just have this, you enter this zone where he's got that look on his face of, I'm not afraid of the moment, but I hope this goes in. Like, you get the sense that's what it was. His reaction when he would miss big shots in those 2 years was much different, where it was just this look would set in over him. Where it was, okay, let's make this next one. Against Philly, it was frustration and anger because I expect to make these. Tonight, they don't call timeout. They attack, and what they do is, we're not going to have Drew bring it up. We're not going to try and get Giannis set here and, okay, let's put him at the block and maybe he'll try a turnaround or whatever. Giannis, you're getting the ball right out of the inbounds and just go downhill and attack. He knows he's going to get fouled. He goes to the line and calmly hits those free throws. I mean, all of it. This was, you could not have asked for a better performance to say, the Bucks win the game and Giannis is going to become the all-time leading scorer in team history. Write the script and how it goes. This is exactly how it would have went. He breaks the record on a three-pointer. That also ties the game. And then, and then he turns around and he makes a defensive play that sends it to overtime. And then in overtime, he eventually wins the game. He's the MVP. There is one reason coming into this season, I think there is one reason why Giannis was going to have a lot of votes withheld. And voters were going to hold it against him of, we can't make him MVP. He's got to score 40 points a game. Otherwise, we can't make him MVP for this reason. I'll tell you what it is after this. As we wrap up the show, the biggest Bucks win of the season on a night where Giannis becomes the scoring king. The MVP debate next on the show.
Stick around. Bucks Talk continues next. Presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all. Welcome back to Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all.
The inbound pass to Durant for the win. The three-pointer misses, back iron, and the Bucks have come from behind to strike again. They take down the Nets 120-119 in overtime as the Bucks go on a 21-11 run after falling behind by 108 by a score of 108-99 with about 5 minutes to go in the fourth. It was a superhuman effort on what can only be described as a super game. Intensity still the same. I'm shooting up for my rings.
with Peyton Manning, tight end. Can't stop if it's on, so they resolve. Giannis with 8 straight 30-point games against the Brooklyn Nets. And I mentioned, I don't remember if I mentioned this on the network, the radio network pregame show, or if it was just on Twitter. But Giannis's dominance against the Brooklyn Nets since Kevin Durant arrived there, in the games that Kevin Durant has played in as well. So now we're really starting to qualify things here. But Giannis head-to-head against Durant. He is now 19 times since Kevin Durant arrived in Brooklyn has Giannis played against him. How many of those games do you think he has won?
You said 9 games?
What did I say? Did I say 19? 13.
Oh, 13.
13 times, yes.
I would say at least, I'd say 10.
He's 9-4 in the 13 games, so you're close. 9-4. And prior to tonight, in the 12 games he had played against Kevin Durant as a member of the Brooklyn Nets, including the playoffs, 33.8 points, 11.9 rebounds, 4.6 assists. Oh, by the way, tonight, 44 points, 14 rebounds, 6 assists. And he was 14 of 21 from the floor, 1 of 4 on his threes, and 15 of 19 at the free throw line. His shooting splits in those games, 54% from the field. Pretty good. Pretty good. 32%, basically, if we round up, I'm going to, 32% from three. 59% from the free throw line. Not great. But that was largely due to he shot 48% at the free throw line in that series last year. He was really bad in that series. And that was the moment that, no more. I can't do this anymore. And became a pretty good free throw shooter, including the performance tonight with his 15 made threes. So he continues to dominate. Not just against Kevin Durant, not just against the Nets, not just against everyone. It's what, 8 straight games now, I think, that he scored 80 points. Or 80 points, that'd be incredible. 8 straight games that he has scored 30 or more on the road. It's his 10th 40-point game of the season. And it is the, oh, now I lost it. But I think it's the 5th straight game he's had 30 or more against the Brooklyn Nets. He's unstoppable. In the last 2 days, 2 games, I should say, what he's done. Over 80 points, 84 points, 28 boards. He's the MVP. He is the MVP. By the way, this was an hour ago. So as the game had just ended, did you see it? You know what I'm referring to?
Are you talking about the Twitter exchange between Kevin Durant and one particular writer?
Yes. So Kevin Durant, not one to shy away from social interaction, social media interaction. Nick Wright had tweeted out, "I legit feel bad for KD. He had to be second best to LeBron for a decade, and the moment he might have passed LeBron, Giannis passed him. Second player out of high school, second pick in the draft." I'm assuming he means second best player coming out of high school. Second pick in the draft, second best player in the NBA for life. Legit awful luck. A lot of truths to that, and he himself had said, "I was sick of being second, Kevin Durant." But, I mean,
look, basketball doesn't stop tomorrow. Right. I understand.
Don't feel bad for the god. Life has been incredible, little Nicky. I mean. Look, here's the other thing. Kevin Durant is like, Kevin Durant is one of them, but somebody else has joined the party. I was going to say, Kevin Durant is the guy that has probably, in terms of peers and players in the league, put the most respect on Giannis's name. How he talked him up last year, what he had to say about him after that series, and even, you know, the video that was caught as they were walking off the floor together too, and Kevin Durant telling him, "Go win the championship. Like, this is on you now. Go get it." Kevin Durant has been one of the few, because for whatever reason, Giannis is not in that clique among his peers. Kevin Durant is a guy that has been like, nah, this guy's good. Did you see the Joel Embiid and J.J. Redick exchange?
I was about to bring that up as one of the, another evidence.
Another reason why, look, I understand why most of you guys hate on Joel Embiid. But here's the unfortunate part.
Still really good. It's
just like the Nick Wright. Kevin Durant has just had this bad luck to be emerging at a time that LeBron James was dominating the league, and then it's, okay, now he's going to take over in the Bay Area, right? Like, no, you're not taking Steph Curry's team from him. So then it's, all right, I'm going to go start my own thing. And Kyrie Irving happens, and James Harden. By the way, we got to get into this too. Remind me to get to this point, but about Kyrie Irving and James Harden. He goes there. And now Giannis wins a title. And now Giannis just looks like, as we started the show and said, before the season began, I think it was really down to that of, well, KD's still probably the best player in the league, but Giannis is the best two-way player. Now Giannis is the best player. And at best for Kevin Durant, it's, well, would you rather KD or Giannis? It's one of those two guys. But Giannis is the best player, and he has proven that this week. So we will get to that Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving point. But I've been mentioning the MVP debate all night long. Now, I do not have an MVP vote.
Not yet.
Do you? You have one?
Oh, me? No, no. You would think, but no.
Yeah, they don't look into clip art as a, as grounds for an MVP vote. I kind of feel like he's going to win it now. He being Giannis. So the Basketball Reference MVP tracker, which we have referenced quite a bit on this show, as of today, but I do not believe this has taken today's games into account. So going into this game, check it tomorrow morning. Prior to tip-off, Basketball Reference, which we'll give the spiel again, their MVP award tracker ranks candidates based on a model that they built using previous voting results. And you basically have to hit all the qualifiers. Played at least 70% of the league average for your team to qualify for this. So they formulated this model that says, well, here's how the vote went the last few years. We think based off that we can forecast here's how it's going to go this year. They still have Nikola Jokic as the clear-cut favorite at 42.2% probability to win the MVP. Remember when Giannis was third behind Joel Embiid, or he and Embiid were basically even for a long stretch there? Giannis is second with a 26.7% probability, so still a significant gap. But it's Giannis and Jokic. And then everybody else. I mean, it's actually Jokic, half-step down Giannis, and then everybody else. Joel Embiid is third with a 9.5% chance. And look, here's the tough part for Joel Embiid. He's been really good. He's got a case. He just like we said with Kevin Durant, Joel Embiid has the misfortune, just like Kevin Durant had the misfortune of playing in the league and Giannis in LeBron's peak, and now in the ascent of Giannis, Joel Embiid has the misfortune of the league basically throwing big men to the wayside for a decade, and now all of a sudden they're embracing it again, where the three clear best players in the league are all basically centers. Joel Embiid has the misfortune of playing in the NBA at the same time as Giannis, and the same time this pudgy kid from Serbia entered the league and then lost a ton of weight and became incredible in Nikola Jokic. So not only MVP, first team All-NBA. There's a lot of talk that voters are going to say, well, we'll put all three of them on there. The way that works, though, is you got to collude, right? Because the way the ballot is structured is centers, forwards, and guards. It's still the old school approach. It's not just front court and back court.
That's got to be on the wayside of changing.
Well, and probably, but you've seen a lot of guys like Tim Bontemps, one of our guys, Tim Bontemps, who has said, look, if you have it structured as such, I'm going to vote as that. Like, maybe your intention is just pick the best players. Sure, but right now it's pick a center, pick two forwards, pick two guards. So that's what I'm going to do. So you've seen a lot of writers saying, well, how could one of these three guys not be first-team All-NBA this season if they're 1, 2, and 3 in MVP? We gotta put them all on the ballot. So Jokic, do you vote for him as a forward? Do you vote for Embiid as a forward? You cannot vote for Joel Embiid as a forward. Giannis is the only certainty. We know Giannis is going to be first-team forward All-NBA. But I think a lot of people are going to try and finagle both of them on the vote, on the ballot. The way that works is you vote for the player at a position. So you would have to collude with everybody else that's voting. I think it's 100 voters. You'd have to get some collusion and say, hey, guys, send out the – let's get a group chat going here. Start up a Slack. First team All-NBA Slack. And you're invited, and you're invited. Okay, here's what we're going to do. Embiid is the center. Vote Jokic as a forward. So the way the votes are dispersed is whatever you get the most votes for, position-wise, that's what you appear as on the ballot, and then points come into play. So if there's 100 voters, if 50 voters say Nikola Jokic is a forward, and 50 guys vote for, or 85 guys vote for Jokic on the first team, and 15 say, no, he's a center, I vote for him on the second team. He has 50 forward votes. He has forward is his position, and he has 85 points. If Joel Embiid gets 45 votes at forward, he's a forward instead of a center. It's likely center that you're going to run into this issue where majority are going to vote each of them at center, and there's going to be a little staggering, but points come into play. So only one can appear on that ballot. So you would have to say, look, vote this guy as a forward, vote this guy as a center. Otherwise, one of them is dropping to second team. So if you're Joel Embiid, it's not only MVP of like, what do I got to do around here? I've been getting better and better every year, and now I can't win the MVP because Nikola Jokic and Giannis are in the league, and I can't even get on first team because both of those guys are in the league and play at that position. Like, you could argue I've had the second best season, and I'm not going to win MVP, and I'm not going to be first team All-NBA. That is the ultimate tough scene for Joel Embiid. But for Giannis, to put the car in the garage now, it took long enough. The MVP discussion. There, to me, is one reason why Giannis entered this season and he was not going to win the MVP. He wasn't going to garner a lot of attention for it unless he did something incredible this season in terms of statistics, which he has. And that is because he won back-to-back MVPs. And look, voters, it's like the back end of the is it People magazine or Us Weekly, where it's like celebs, they're just like us. Voters are just like us. They hold grudges.
Unbelievable.
They don't forget things. Giannis won back-to-back MVPs, and then his team lost a competitive series to the Raptors, but they blew a 2-0 lead, and then they flamed out in the second round. So then it was, okay, no more. We tried with this guy. I told you so. He's not on that level of the all-time greats. But then Giannis did what he did last year, and you started to wonder, okay, I think that kicks open the door for him a little bit. But because he already won two MVPs, that meant the next time he wins an MVP, and he will win another MVP at this point, the next time he wins an MVP, he joins three pretty important names, two really important names. Moses Malone, Larry Bird, and Magic Johnson. Those are the only three players in NBA history to win the MVP award three times. It is a sacred cow to NBA voters of, nope, you're telling me you're as good as Magic Johnson. You're telling me you're as good as Larry Bird. Bob Pettit, Karl Malone, Tim Duncan, Steve Nash, Steph Curry, and Giannis have each won it twice. And actually Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain, too, we left them off. But again, two more all-time greats. So you're telling me you're in that list. That is the reason why I think voters were holding it against Giannis and Kareem. Jeez, we're just missing names left and right here. But basically, here's what we're getting at. Three-time MVP winners are among the greatest in the history of the sport. Michael Jordan. Voters are hesitant to put Giannis at that level because if you say, what does this guy have in common with Michael Jordan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bill Russell, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, all these players? Hey, I know, LeBron James, who has the GOAT discussion. Greatest of all time. Giannis's recognition on the NBA's All-75. I know it's not the official ranking, but The Athletic had him at number 24. I mean, if you're one of the 24 best players of all time, you can win three straight MVPs. And if you do things like he did tonight, you close out the game on both ends of the floor, you make a statement, your team wins 11 games in this month, and you are just unstoppable the way that he is and the way that he was against the Sixers, the way he was tonight. You could see the frustration in teams like, what do you want me to do? That's what opponents, that's the look they had on their face against Bill Russell, against Wilt Chamberlain, against Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, against Moses Malone, against Larry Bird, against Magic Johnson, against Michael Jordan, against LeBron James. That's the category Giannis needs to be in. I think he's going to win the MVP now because he did it against the Sixers in a game that we said, hey, this could determine the two seed. And now he did it against the Brooklyn Nets, a team that national media loves, and they love Kevin Durant, and they love paying attention to that. And now, hey, this Giannis guy just keeps rolling. I think he's going to pass Nikola Jokic because of this week, especially if I do not expect him to play tomorrow night against the Clippers, but especially if he has a big performance against Luka and the Mavs on Sunday, I think he's going to win the MVP. If he puts up 30 against the Celtics next week, too, it's over. He's the MVP. And if the Bucks finish number one in the Eastern Conference, he is the MVP. So the tide has definitely shifted here in the last couple of weeks. What a special night, though. A big win, another signature win, and we get to witness Giannis becoming the all-time leading scorer in Bucks franchise history. My thanks to all of you guys for hanging out on this supersized edition of the show, all the interaction that we got tonight on the program. Do not hesitate to do the same once again tomorrow. It's more Bucks talk with the Bucks taking on the Los Angeles Clippers. They return home for the first of two games. That's a 7 o'clock tip. We expect to hit the airwaves at 10 o'clock with the show. My thanks to everybody for hanging out and giving us their time for the last hour. My thanks to Max and to the returning Greg Hill. One night only, though. The returning Greg Hill.
I'll be back.
For producing the program. You have been listening to Bucks Talk, presented by Gruber Law Offices.
Today, Bud Light's introducing a